ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानञ्जनशलाखय चाक्षुरुन्मीलितां येन तस्मै श्रीगवे नमः नाम श्रेष्ठान्मनुमापि सच्चिपुत्रं मत्रस्वरूपं रूपं तस्याग्रजमुरूपुरीं माथुरीं गोष्ठावतीं राधाकुण्डं गिरिवरं महो राधिकमधावसम् प्राप्तो यस्य प्रतीत्थकृपाया श्रीगुरुं तं नतोऽस्मि वंशकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपा सिन्धुभ्यैव च पतितानं पवानेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः निखिलाश्रुतिमौले रत्नमालदिति निराजिता पदपङ्कजन्ता आजिमुक्तकुलैरुपश्यामनं परितस्त्वं हरिणां संश्रयामि अनारपितचरीं चिरात्करुणयावतीर्णा कलुः समार्पयितुमुन्नतोज्ज्वलरासं स्वभक्तिश्रियं हरिपुरतः सुन्दराद्युतिकदम्बसन्दीपितः सदा हृदये कन्दरे स्फुरतो वासचिनन्दनः अजानुलम्बिता भुजो कनका वदतु सङ्कीर्तनैकपितरो कमलाय तक्षु विश्वम्बरो धियावरो जुगधर्मपालो वन्दे जगत्प्रियकरो करुणावतारो लादिनी शक्ति स्वरूपाय गौरंगा सुरिदाय च भक्त शक्ति प्रदनाय गदाधर नमोस्तुते हे कृष्ण करुणा सिंधु दीनबंधो जगत्पते उपेशा गोपिका कंता राधा कंता नमोस्तुते राधे वृंदावनादिशे करुणामृतवाहिनी कृपया निज पादब्जदस्यन्मयं प्रदीयतम् भक्त्या विहीनाय अपराधलक्षय क्षिप्ताष्टाकमादितरङ्गमाद्ये कृपामयि त्वं शरणं प्रपानम् वृन्दे नमस्ते शरणारविन्दम् वृन्दे नमस्ते शरणारविन्दम् श्री सचिनंदन गौर हरि की जय श्री हरि नाम प्रभु की जय साधु संग की जय सेंट फ्रांसिस ऑफ असीसी की जय सेंट फ्रांसिस ऑफ लवर्ना की जय गौर प्रेमानंद हरि बोल Okay, someone once insists on Brahmara Gita, the song of the bamboo. Yeah.
It's actually horsefly.
So it's entering, oh, from the windows are open? It's glass.
Maybe the doors fully open, which
I think it's fine. It's okay. Okay. Okay, I have a parallel event now. Okay, back to Laverna. Welcome to all of you, Pranam, good morning. Thanks for coming and hope you had a good rest and good internalizing of what we have been experiencing so far, will be continued to experience. It's very important also to have some time for processing the content that we are receiving by grace. And today we continue reflecting. Yesterday we had a little introduction about coming here as pilgrims, hopefully not as tourists, which is a big difference, just in case, tourism and pilgrimage, and appreciating life itself as pilgrimage, not only coming here as pilgrims, but hopefully walking life as pilgrims. We spoke about Our retreat is an interfaith one. We are hoping to. We are all Gaudiya Vaishnavs coming to San Francis land. I remember a friend of mine, Christian pastor Scarlett, invited me once to go with her Christian group to Jagannath Puri. So that's an inverted version of it. So it's both sides are two beautiful sides of the same coin, exploring sister traditions together and hopefully being open to be transformed by that, right? Not just, as you say yesterday, mere religious tolerance, not even passive appreciation, but openness to transformation. And in this way, gradually preparing ourselves to enter eternal community, and how we dare to coexist together in harmony, open and learning from one another, which we hope to do in for the rest of forever, as a friend of mine will say. So today I was thinking I would like to get in more introduced into the, yesterday was more of an introductory talk. Today I'd like to explore a little bit the life and teachings of both St. Francis and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Briefly, as much as we can do in a morning lecture, it takes a few lifetimes to get acquainted to that. So I'd like to establish some some parallels and some connections between these two great masters and personalities in these two traditions. On one side, of course, we could say St. Francis is a historical figure who is the one who most embodied, at least for many, the life and teachings of Christ. Many will say he was a literalist, but in the best sense of the word. So Jesus said, follow me and do like that. And he said, okay. And he did it literally. So it's his own form of Raganuga bhakti. Because Raganuga means to follow in the footsteps of the mood of someone. So St. Francis made his own Raganuga Christian path. And he took the life of Christ and he literally embodied that life and make it his own. And that's why he's famously known also in the Christian tradition as the second Christ. Now, if there's a second Christ who embodied the life of Jesus as much as anyone could have done, St. Francis generally describes as that person. And in his own way, again, we are not making absolute parallels. We don't to just merge every person and every tradition is the same, because it's not. But as much as we can compare, Mahaprabhu somehow is the historical figure as well. I mean, we know he existed and he came to earth, in that sense, historical figure who most, in my opinion, who most fully embodied Krishna in one sense, because Mahaprabhu is Krishna, but he's Krishna 2.0. Krishna upgraded experiencing what he could not experience in Braja Lila, and that's a whole different conversation. We had that retreat last year. Sorry, guys, you're the ones who couldn't come, but they are recorded. So we explore in detail why Mahaprabhu is Krishna. As Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, I will say Mahaprabhu is the Supreme Personality of Krishna. Okay? And why, in many ways, St. Francis embodied Christ, Mahaprabhu not only embodied Krishna, but embodied Radha's love for Krishna. Radha Bhava Dyuti Sevalitam Naomi Krishna Sarupam. So Mahaprabhu is Krishna in the mood of Radha, mostly embodying the love of the goddess. So we have some parallel between these two. Historical figure, both, of course, they were born separate with almost 300 years, but embodying in many ways a particular expression of the divine. Of course, for us, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is God himself, and nobody will say in Christianity, St. Francis God. No, so there is some ontological difference there. But at the same time, Mahaprabhu is God in the mood of the devotee, right? So he's bhakta. He's Bhagavan in the mood of a bhakta. Well, actually, whenever we speak about Bhagavan, we will say Bhagavan is always a bhakta, because Bhagavan is always a devotee of his devotees. Well, that's what Sukadev Goswami says in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Interestingly, that's the most profound definition of Bhagavan. Because generally Bhagavan is he who has all this opulence and all these qualities overtly God. But the Bhagavatam has one line that says Bhagavan Bhakta Bhaktimam. Bhagavan is the Bhakta of his Bhaktas. That reveals Sukadeva Goswami. That's the ultimate facet of Bhagavan. He who falls in love with his lovers. So Bhagavan is the devotee of his devotee. Bhagavan is the lover of his lover. That's Bhagavan proper. So in that sense, Bhagavan, Mahaprabhu is Bhagavan, is God. Who is God? A devotee of his devotees. Who is Saint Francis? A devotee. So both are devotees. Bhakta and Bhagavan are devotees of each other. No? So again, since God is always a devotee, and Saint Francis is not God, but is also a devotee, we can find enough parallels in the life of both, between the life of both as devotees. So we'll explore that briefly today. Yeah? Are you agree?
Yes.
Okay. Fasten your seatbelts, please. And also we'll try to explore those parallels or those connections that also hopefully are more, feel more relevant and urgent for us in our daily practice. So it's not just some qualities to admire from the distance, wow, these great personalities, but how can we embrace those things, as I say yesterday, aspirationally? You know, how we can aspire to follow in those footsteps and embody that as much as we can. We may not there be yet. We may not be there yet. Sorry. But it's always healthy to have some ideals to aspire for, which clearly are beyond our scope still, but still to have them as an aspiration in itself gives our whole life meaning, some meaning and purpose. It puts our whole life in a new context. Like Prabhupada Saraswati says in one prayer, in Radha Rasa Sudanid, he says, I want to serve Sri Radha, but if I cannot attain that, at least let me die with this aspiration. If I can die aspiring for that, my life is a success. So it's not about becoming neurotic. I have to get it in this lifetime, the whole product, so to say. If I can sincerely aspire for this ideal, which may be lifetimes away from me, let me die with that aspiration. That's the biggest blessing. And I know that that aspiration will take me to whatever I need to attain. That's for sure. I have hope, deep hope in that. So again, what we will be doing is in a way also trying to introduce the life of Saint Francis to some of you. Some of you may be familiar with his life. Some of you may have read some of the books we recommended to become familiar with his life. And if not, you may be inspired enough to do that during after the retreat. Highly recommended. But also not only as a way of introducing Saint Francis today, we'll share these ideas, but also as a way of reintroducing Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu into our lives. For those of us who take for granted Sri Chaitanya, I know that golden guy already, golden God. Now, seeing him in a new light through the life of Saint Francis, seeing Saint Francis in a new light through the life of Mahaprabhu, both great masters shedding light on each other and on us to reappreciate, re-see with fresh eyes everything. And again, making them relevant figures for our life as they should be. Now, these great saints or master from the past should not be museum pieces, relics from the past to admire from a distance without any, fully irrelevant to where we are now. That's not the idea at all. So hopefully we can keep that as alive as they are into our hearts. So I will mention different points of connection, briefly unpack some of those, and at the end, if I'm missing some important ones, you please let me know. I mean, there are so many. And let's begin with the foundation of everything, I will say, which gives shape to all their life and teachings, which is their love. Their love, the love they embody, the love they have for the divine. Even Mahaprabhu being the divine himself, embodying a particular love for the divine goddess in this case. So, so one first combination will be this, the divine intoxication, divine love, in love that both Saint Francis and Mahaprabhu had, the ecstatic way in which that was expressed by both. Both were ecstatics. We can use that word not only as an adjective, but as a noun. They were ecstatics, right? When a word is both an adjective as a noun, that says something, right? And if you are not only the adjective, but you become the noun, oh, that's something. He's feeling ecstatic. He's an ecstatic. He's ecstatic is one thing. She's an ecstatic is like, okay, you're embodying that on another level. So again, both are remembered not as mere teachers of doctrine. They were teachers, but they were embodied mystics. So so to say, walking their talk, living their talk, their bodies becoming instruments of divine love. And we will get there. The embodied part is very connected to this place and the stigmata, which is something very embodied, and we will be talking about that more in detail tomorrow. But Saint Francis is always remembered like dancing and glowing and singing and weeping and embracing creation and crying. So that's very embodied, very ecstatic, very embodied. Like he was physically enacting the gospel. Let's put it that way. The gospel, which is the main section of the Bible for Christians, he was a physical enactment of that. Enactment, no? Which is very interestingly connected with the word lila. Lila means like a dramatic performance, like an enactment. So eventually we are invited to do that, to physically enact the essence of our tradition's teaching. Saint Francis enacted the gospel, Mahaprabhu enacted the Bhagavatam. Mahaprabhu took the Bhagavatam, embraced the Bhagavatam, and enacted that through his life and teaching. Mm-hmm. So, like St. Francis Sriman Mahaprabhu was similarly described as a physically intoxicated madman, singing and dancing and swooning and disappearing and falling on the ground and falling on the ocean and melting with the stone and all his limbs being discombobulated and entering in trance for hours, for days, and dancing nonstop and sweating. We will get more in detail to that, but laughing and weeping and like, this person is crazy. Yes, he is. As I said the other day, free will means pick your madness. You become madness in love of God, or you become madness because you are not mad for love of God. So we can begin there, establishing that parallel between these two great masters in their love and their way, the ecstatic way they embodied what was going on inside of them. And of course, as a natural extension of that comes another parallel, which is their emphasis on song, on dance, on praise, on celebrating life through movement in many ways. I like to say we are part of Mahaprabhu's movement, but the movement started with the movement inside Mahaprabhu's heart. Someone was deeply moving inside his heart that took him to move, embodying the inner movement in the form of external movement and dance and celebration. Those who witnessed that movement were moved internally, then start to move externally. And eventually a whole movement as it is was created that now has buildings and papers and legal stuff and messiness in between. But we should not forget that all the what we call a movement now started with this movement, like a very deep flame in the heart. And that flame should be kept flaming in a very holy way. So Francis was basically the same. He loved song. He composed songs himself, the famous. For example, we'll go through there in a few days. The Canticle of Creatures, where he's referring to the totality of creation in terms of as relatives, basically, all our brothers and sisters. So he shaped his own whole outlook in terms of celebration and song and praise. And of course, Sri Chaitanya's path is centered on Sankirtan, which is what we just done a few minutes ago. Singing the divine names publicly, privately, in a communal way, very ecstatic form of prayer. So both are showing that divine love is seeking expression not merely through theology, which also does, theology to express, to make sense of faith seeking understanding, as they will say, that's what theology is, but also through song, through rhythm, through tears, through dance, through sure communal devotion. So there's another connection between the two of them. Hopefully we start to get a sense of how close these two are. So they appear almost three centuries apart. What would have been a meeting between Sri Chaitanya and St. Francis? We can just stop the lecture there on this slide. I won't be giving that as any prompt for any exercise, but that's an extra one if you want to. After the retreat, you go on your own retreat for a week and just imagine it. Sacred imagination. There's a good role for imagination. What must be a meeting between Mahaprabhu and St. Francis? what could have happened? Probably the whole planet would have exploded. That's why the two of them could not meet. It would have been too much for Mother Bhumi. No, that was too much intensity. Anyhow, I just shared the prompt just in case. So another parallel could be their radical simplicity. Yes, they were talking about simplicity, right? In our tradition, actually, interestingly, Vaishnavism in Chaitanya Charitamrita is described also as Sharalata. Sharalata means simplicity. That's another name of our religion. What's the name of our religion? Simplicity. Of course, you have to embody that for people to believe you're practicing that religion. So they embodied that, both St. Francis Mahaprabhu. Simplicity, and of course, if I dare to say, what we will call holy poverty. That's a very important word, especially in the Franciscans. So you may have seen yesterday when we were with Friar Roshan. He had like this, how you call it? The court? No, court. So it has three knots. So that has to do with three vows they're due, you know, in terms of chastity, obedience, and poverty. And Francis will refer to poverty as lady poverty. Now, it was a goddess for Francis. It was not just not having anything in your pockets, not having pockets to begin with. As you could see from his clothes yesterday, they were not like fancy arrangement with multiple stuff. No pockets, nothing, no need to that. So he will refer to poverty as lady poverty, a very demanding goddess. As one Franciscan priest told me the other day in the Netherlands, we were talking about poverty, she's a very demanding lady, he will tell me. I could see his eyes like, okay, he's walking his stuff. So again, poverty is basically like a deliberate renunciation of social status, position, being someone in the eyes of the world, not only wealth, not only money, but the false sense of I in terms of what I have, what I am, what I do, here I am, but defining myself in terms of who I actually am. So it's a radical simplification, simplicity in terms of simplifying my existence from all that is not me, so I can be me. So letting go of possessiveness to develop another type of possessiveness. Because in our tradition, prem, divine love, is characterized by mamatva, which means possessiveness. A possessiveness in connection to Krishna, to Radha and Krishna. Raghunath Das Goswami will say, tavaivasmi, tavaivasmi, najivami tvayavina, tiviknyaya, radhi, tvam, etc. He's saying, I'm yours, so Sri Radha, I'm yours. So it's a type of possessiveness in relationship to the divine. But for that possessiveness to happen, we need to get rid of all the other senses of possessiveness, which is what I think belongs to me. Well, the real question is, to whom do I belong? Right? So this poverty is embodied in that way. And in many ways, Mahaprabhu did the same. He embodied the goddess in another way. He may not have spoken of the goddess poverty, lady poverty. He was embodying the spirit of the goddess as Sri Radha. And in many ways that took him also, his passion took him to renounce everything. So first of all, before even his sannyas, renounce his position as Nimai Pandit. That's not little. He was a very famous scholar, to renounce knowledge, to renounce prestige, to renounce all the things and become an ecstatic madman. And the whole society thought, oh, this guy went crazy. No, the day before, everyone was like, we love you. In many ways, Rumi's life was similar. He was a very sober teacher and scholar and earning his money, having all the comfort zone in place. If he met Shams of Tabriz, and he was spoiled then. No, he became crazy and everyone thought, this guy is crazy. So that's different ways of embracing simplicity and poverty, which we may not be able to copy paste and imitate in one way, but somehow we have to be inspired enough to hopefully aspire to follow in their footsteps somehow or other. So here and now, Mahaprabhu renounced honor, renounced scholarship. Of course, eventually, literally, he embraced and renounced the world in one way, accepting the vow of sannyas, of renunciation. And even when he was a sannyas, he will say, Naham viprana chanara patirna piva ishana sudranaham parnina chagriha patirna vanasto yatirva. He said, I'm not even a sannyas. Okay, I'm a sannyas externally. I act as such. But internally, I don't want to take sannyas as a property, as a designation. So I even renounce that label. Another way of speaking about poverty. And again, to live with such radical simplicity and poverty is to challenge the power systems of the time without challenging them outwardly. That was the genius, for example, of St. Francis. He will never denouncing, hey, you guys in the church, we are surrounded by opulence and richness and all this stuff that has nothing to do with the life of Christ. He never said that. He just embodied Jesus' life and allowed that to speak for itself. And that spoke quite loud. That was his way of denouncing corruption or deviation, very silently in one way, but very strongly in the way he embodied that. So Mahaprabhu in the same way. You know, they became poor, they became barefoot. Mahaprabhu, from a celebrated pandit, he became a weeping servant, a weeping ecstatic, etc., etc. So both are embodying this, we will call it a downward path. It's not so much an ascending path of position and fame and things and property, but just like actually getting rid of all that. As we were listening yesterday, Francis was born in a very wealthy merchant family, good social status. All the girls in Assisi were mad after him. They will go to buy the clothes, but actually they want to see him, who was like selling the clothes with his father. So their path is not so much about acquiring power, not even spiritual power or position, but how to say, simplifying themselves to become more and more available to love. No? That's a good way of putting it. No? And it's a good question for us. How do I simplify my life to become more available to love? Because sometimes I'm not available, that available, because I have too many things that I'm attending to. I have too many things that are occupying my mind, my time. How can I simplify that as much as is possible and healthy to have more presence and attention and availability to the demanding call of love? Lovingly demanding. Okay, another point. I'm getting lost. There are so many. I don't know. We'll skip breakfast. That's fine. Poverty, simplicity. Come on, guys. In connection to that also, in the words of Father Richard Rohr, St. Francis, he subverted the honor-shame culture of the time that was established in the religious context. Honor-shame. Like some people is honor because of this. And if you do not fit into that particular box, you are ashamed. You are put outside. You become an whatever, ostracized person, an outcast. So St. Francis subverted that honor-shame system, which gave privilege to this and that person and this and that. And the other ones, we don't want to see them. Let's put them somewhere else in the city so we don't even have to walk on their shadow. This type of thing that also were typical at the time of Mahaprabhu in India with the caste system and people like, oh, do not walk. Don't be touched with the shadow of this person or this or that. So they all refused status symbols. They all refused, I don't know, fancy clothing, fancy weaponry, fancy anything, social prestige, as we already said. And like St. Francis, you know, like Mahaprabhu himself, he will surround himself also by scholars, like the Goswami, but also by poor people, ostracized people, outcast considered at the time, embracing lepers like St. Francis did. There are many stages, example of Mahaprabhu embracing Vasudev, that curing him of leprosy, Sanatan Goswami having all these sores, Mahaprabhu embracing him. So again, the two of them deeply inclined toward the socially marginalized. Haridas Thakur. Anyhow, all those outside the orthodox social boundaries or orthodox Hindu system, whatever the case. Even those seen as morally fallen, because there were also people like that in both cases. So in this sense, both St. Francis and Mahaprabhu became, shameless. In which sense I mean shameless? Like shameless in the eyes of conventional respectability. No? How you dare to embrace such a leper? How you dare to... No? Because their point was like, divine love redefines honor. Now, who is to be honored? That has to be according to the criteria of divine love, not to the criteria of power and money and fame and position. That's not the proper honor and respect. So divine love redefines the whole notion of honor. And that's why Mahaprabhu will say, Amani na manadina. Now, in the eyes of love, everyone is worthy of honor and respect. From the perspective of love, everyone deserves. He himself embodied that. So again, we have this love for the marginalized, the St. Francis. Of course, St. Francis' conversion happened as you may have paid attention to the corridor yesterday. One of the pictures was when St. Francis experienced Christ by embracing a leper. That was his breakthrough moment, his conversion moment. He embraced a leper that for many times he had been avoiding, because again, the lepers were living somewhere downward in the hill here, even in Assisi, like in another part of the city. You don't want to see them and be touched by them, so to say. And St. Francis at one point saw the leper, and with the beginning was like a very difficult moment for him to get close, and eventually he embraced the leper. And he was healed by the leper, basically. He was converted by the leper. He experienced, that was his conversion point. So very similarly, Mahaprabhu extended that to not only to lepers, but to Jagai, Madai, again, as we say, outcast Rupa and Sanatan Goswami, who were born as Brahmins, but because they were working with Muslims in the government, socially they were considered outcasts. So even when we say, no, but Mahaprabhu was with very big Pandit scholar Brahmins, Rupa, Sanatan, yeah, but socially speaking, they were seen as outcasts as well. You can say that most of his associates were not in the highest esteem, socially speaking, in the eyes of the time. So the point is that both St. Francis and Mahaprabhu were revealing a theology where grace precedes qualification, or grace brings the qualification. That's basically the idea. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that in, I think, Navadvip Bhavataranga. He says, our adhikar depends on how much grace we have been able to embrace. Because sometimes we think adhikar is, I will make effort and deserve it and qualify myself. No, grace qualifies you. No, that's the real qualification we want. Not a qualification that I can obtain independent of grace. That's a disqualification. All the so-called merits and prizes that I can show to the world and that I have obtained without the need of begging for grace, that's actually my disqualification. That proves more and more how disqualified. But what comes from grace, what cannot be earned, what cannot be earned, deserved, that's the real qualification. What comes beyond my separate effort. So again, both Francis and Mahaprabhu embrace lepers, refer to the socially marginalized, ostracized, the spiritually and socially untouchable of the time. They were especially inclined in every direction, but in that direction. So we could say they are showing how love touches what society avoids. Love touches, reaches toward the point where society don't want to see in that direction. And there's always an any time a type of that. And it's not just a few hundred years ago. Every single time in history, you have your own version of who are the untouchables, who are the parias, who are the outcasts, who are the marginalized, who are the unseen ones. And of course, if we want to serve, to follow Mahaprabhu, St. Francis, we have to embody, okay, where do we need to put our attention and allow grace to go in that direction? Every direction, but also especially in that direction. What else? Another parallel. Both St. Francis and Mahaprabhu, they rebuilt the tradition from within. There's a famous moment where St. Francis hears the voice of God that says, rebuild my church, right? Again, he was a literalist. He started to rebuild the church physically, a church that was a little, and then he eventually realized, oh no, the invitation was way more comprehensive, which was like the whole church, Christian church at the time, was in a moment of crisis, and St. Francis was invited to give it new life, new shape in the most profound way. So he never abandoned Christianity again. Even if he will perceive certain things that were not in line, he again renewed it by his own example, by his own life, through radical gospel simplicity. And Mahaprabhu somehow similarly, he renewed the old Vedic law, no, which somehow was being abused and misused and misunderstood by many to create the whole privileged system of caste and birth and this and that. He gave new life to the whole thing with the radical accessibility of Sankirtan, breaking all boundaries, like everyone is qualified immediately. You don't need to do this or be born here or be have this position in society. You're already ready. You're already ready for that. No? And he brought the supremacy of love over caste, over knowledge, over ritual purity. He broke with all that. Him, Nityananda Prabhu, and all his band of brothers and sisters, right? Which was the norm, again, at the society at that time. It may be difficult for us to fully appreciate this if we do not travel in time and become acquainted with how people thought about at the time of each one of them to fully understand, wow, this was really revolutionary. This was really powerful. And then again, we have to go travel back in time here and see, okay, where those same systems of power and hierarchy are playing out in the here and now, and how to properly challenge them. To begin with, inside of us, because we are not free from them. So both St. Francis and Mahaprabhu in many ways are reformers from within. Sometimes externally something might happen, but the reform always begins from within. They are not destroyers of the tradition. They are not leaving the tradition. They are restorers of the heart of the tradition. So they are not destroying the tradition. They are restoring the heart of the tradition. So though for some people it may seem you are destroying the tradition, those who want to follow, keep the tradition the same always, like a relic of the past, they will feel this guy is destroying the tradition. No, they are restoring the heart of the tradition. So that tension will always be there. I may be repeating myself in a few things because there are many important golden threads here, but again, this idea of grace beyond ritual purification, that's so important, and I always like to share this pastime where Mahaprabhu goes, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya undergoes a very deep conversion with Mahaprabhu. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was a great pandit, and he met Mahaprabhu, was transformed by his meeting in silence, right? Mahaprabhu converted the greatest pandit in India, just sitting in silence in front of him for a week. He didn't say anything. He just was in silence, and the achar that exuded from him, the realization that came from Mahaprabhu was enough, said enough. He didn't need to say any words. Like this example, these words that are ascribed to St. Francis, where he will say, always preach the gospel, and whatever is necessary, use words. Again, another connection there. Always preach the gospel, whenever necessary, you have to open your mouth. But most of the part, you don't need to open your mouth. Just walk your talk. Mahaprabhu did that, sat in silence, converted the greatest pandit in without saying anything. So the next day, Mahaprabhu goes right to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, newly converted, to his house, like at 3 a.m. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was still like sleeping. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was a pandit who will do everything in a very proper way with ritual purity, waking up, cleaning, bathing, achaman, Sandhya Bhandan, prayers in this direction, all the touching the body in the right places for the prayers, looking in the right. A good boy, good religious boy. Mahaprabhu comes like a wild madman at 3 a.m, enters his house, jumps into his bed. He's there in Jagannath Puri, right? He says, here I have Jagannath Mahaprasad. Yeah. No, so much there is still drooling and like. But he came with the Mahaprasad, the great mercy of Jagannath, right? Who is the Lord of the universe, who is for all, for the universe. He's not the Lord of India, the Lord of Laverna, Lord of the universe, which I like to say is embodiment of unconditional love. He's with his big eyes, unblinking eyes, animisha, he's saying, you are seen by me without blinking. I love you. Extended arms, you are held by me. By his smile, you are loved. So the grace of that great Lord for the whole universe, Jagannath, in the form of food, Mahaprabhu is coming in the morning and bringing to Sarvabhauma, hey, Jagannath Mahaprasad. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya converted now. He didn't feel, oh, I have to bathe and do all the things first. He was like, oh. And Mahaprabhu was like, yes. He got it. He's really converted now. Okay. So that's the idea, no? The grace precedes ritual qualification. Grace in the form of Jagannath Mahaprasad, and then the ritual purification and qualification. You don't need to do all that stuff. Grace comes first. Grace cannot wait for you to be purified. Grace comes first and purifies. Right? It's not that grace first become perfect. That makes a lot of sense. Like I've heard many devotees thinking like that for many years. I thought that first I had to become fully perfect to be qualified to receive grace. I think you got the math backwards, fully backwards. Grace comes right where you are, and then you can purify yourself, become perfect, whatever perfect means, by grace, right? So that's a very important example in Mahaprabhu's Leela, which again, St. Francis embodied in his own way, always giving priority to grace on top of any social position and privilege. So for Francis Mahaprabhu, divine love cannot wait until we are clean. Purified, perfect, clean, even bodily. But divine love comes close enough to make us clean. So it's a simple order of ideas, but get the math right. Okay? It's not that I have to become clean so divine love comes to me. The divine love already is coming to me to make me clean, to make me pure, to make me love. Okay? I told you, fasten your seatbelts. You can use a second one. We go to another point, which probably all of you are waiting, which is nature, the connection with nature and seeing creation as sacred. And we'll spend a whole separate lecture in a few days about it. Brief trailer here. But both Francis saw all of creation, as I told before, as relatives, calling sun, moon, fire, water, different animals, his body, even death, as brother and sisters. So, Vasudhaiva Kutumbakam. Mahaupanishad say the whole world is one family. So there you have Francis embodying that. And Mahaprabhu, in the similar way, he's in the whole world is the Shakti of Bhagavan. It's an energy of God in his service. It's sacred. And he honored that energy properly rather than exploiting it. Mahaprabhu will see every river as sacred, jump into it, will see every mountain go over down, will go through the Jarikanda forest, as we know, famous, very Franciscan. Landscape, Mahaprabhu dancing and singing, and all the animals coming, even animals inimical to one another. I'm sure St. Francis will have had a great time with Mahaprabhu there. So, again, the view of both regarding the world resists a split between matter and spirit. Generally, we humans are very expert at splitting and creating separation, fragmentation. Matter goes there, spirit goes there. They're absolutely different. They have nothing to do with one another. I'm not so sure about it. And these persons are showing that. We'll get to that in a few days to speak more in detail about the need we have to create yoga or union between matter and spirit without making the two of them exactly the same, but at the same time, without making them absolutely separate from one another either. Another important point is that both Francis and Mahaprabhu embodied was the principle of holy companionship. That Francis didn't live alone. He was not alone. He didn't want to be alone. He needed companions. He looked for companions. He has his brothers. Then there came a big fellowship of brothers. They were related in such a beautiful, intimate, loving way. And he will ask his brothers, please treat one another in the same way you will treat your best friend or your beloved, you know, like he will really try to embody that. And Mahaprabhu himself also, he was inseparable from many of his associates, which were very intimate to him, and he depended on them, interestingly, to get the experience he needed to have as Mahaprabhu, Ramananda Roy, Swarup Damodar, you know, and in many other ways, Gadadhar Pandit, and many other associates and friends. So again, the idea here is that. And again, each one of these points could be a separate lecture. So I'm having difficulty like moving to the next one. But the saint, or in this case Mahaprabhu, this great master, are not like isolated geniuses. Like they are just by themselves. I don't need anyone. I do the whole thing myself. But they are, we could say they are the center of a relational field. Right? Okay, they are the center of a movement of their, but it's a relational field. So there are many other people around them and dancing and moving around them, inspired by them. So that's an important principle, the principle of community, fellowship, brotherhood, sisterhood. Since we say sisterhood, of course, we have the feminine presence in both St. Francis' life and Mahaprabhu's life. And here we need a separate retreat for St. Clare of Assisi, which maybe at another time we'll get into that, but tomorrow when we go to Assisi, we'll be visiting her place. But Clare plays a crucial role in the lives of St. Francis' legacy, embodying the Franciscan path in her own way, bringing the feminine energy to balance the equation. We always need the proper integration of feminine and masculine. That's a good way we can even begin to conceive our worship of Radha and Krishna. If someone feels, oh, it's too high, too deep, too esoteric, who am I to worship Radha and Krishna? Start integrating the masculine and feminine dimensions in your own life. That's a way of honoring this, the Radha and Krishna, feminine and masculine. Not to reduce them to that, but not to, how to say, ostracize them to a distant heaven and start to embody them in terms of integration of these feminine masculine polarities. So a whole order came out of St. Clare of Assisi, of sisters. So this is the brotherhood of St. Francis and his brothers and the sisterhood of St. Clare. And in Mahaprabhu, of course, the feminine principle takes different forms. One of them, as we already mentioned, he's embodying God, embodying the goddess, embodying Radha's love, Radha's mood. So that's the male God, Krishna, embodying the feminine God. That's the whole project of Kaur Lila. It's very feminine oriented. Gaudiya Vaishnavism is very feminine oriented. Unfortunately, sometimes it's very much represented in a toxically masculine way. So it's very important to balance the equation. But also we'll say Mahaprabhu had female associates in his group. In fact, one of his four most intimate associates was a woman, was Madhavi Devi, that he allowed her into his inner circle, with whom he will discuss Rasa Katha with other few people only. So that's another point of connection between Mahaprabhu and St. Francis, the role, the presence of the feminine to make their movement functional, not dysfunctional, not out of balance. Another point will be the solitude and the inwardness. Both of them were people of the people. Now they will share with everyone, public figures, but also Francis repeatedly seeks solitude to pray. No? Today we'll be doing that in our inner solitude space. No? Silence, no? Prayer, solitude. To discern and to return to the source of his dream, so to say. And Mahaprabhu, similarly, he moves between public ecstasy and sharing and dancing, but also deep interiority. Many times Mahaprabhu will go on pilgrimage by himself, or sometimes very difficult, with lots of difficulty, he will accept someone to accompany him. But everyone wants to go with him. It's like, I'm going by myself. Don't mess with my solitude. Right? When he goes to South India, log trips almost by himself, when he goes to Vrindavan, so many wants to come. He has to, you stay here, Gadadhar, you stay, no, for different reasons, of course. And of course, then especially the Gambhira years, the last 12 years of Mahaprabhu, just in the Gambhira, which is this small rock room, where he was accompanied by a few friends, but mostly by himself. No? So that's an important point of combining public life, their public life of devotional revolution, and hidden interior depth. We have to also balance that. As Father Richard Rowe will say, action and contemplation. We act in the world, we have our interaction with people, But we need to have our inner world of balance and solitude and prayer. A balance. Like someone asked Father Richard, what's the most important word in your association, Center for Action and Contemplation? He said the most important word is and. The balance between action and contemplation. Of course, another common element that we will explore more in detail tomorrow is divine marking, stigmata, seal of approval, the wound of love. So Francis received the stigmata here in La Verna. Yesterday we were there. He became marked by the wounds of Jesus at the cross. And in different ways, Mahaprabhu's body was marked by different, what we will call sattvic bhavs, or external symptoms of divine love, you know, in the form of tears and trembling and transformations and hairs erected in the body. Wounds of separation, both can be seen as wounds of love. So Mahaprabhu being wounded in separation, in experiencing Radha's love, Radha's agony, Radha's love for Krishna in separation. It is its own agony. So we'll explore more of that tomorrow. What else? Nonviolence and compassion. That was a very important one in the life of both. Francis realized at that time there was so much violence going on in the Christian world in the name of Christianity. And St. Francis realized this violence is mocking the gospel. Like you are making... That's, yeah, anyhow. He didn't say it, he realized it, and he embodied the proper example of embodying a compassionate gospel. And Mahaprabhu similarly emphasized tolerance, humility, compassion, the way he's related to everyone. Especially, again, his golden rule, third verse of Shikshastakam, that's to be engraved in our hearts forever. Something that both embodied very nicely is encountering sister traditions as well. Yesterday we were talking as well at that Francis meeting with the Sultan at Egypt. Remember, like a first model of interfaith dialogue at the time. The picture on fire, I shared a picture of fire also the other day representing the fire of that meeting. And Mahaprabhu himself also did that. When he travels South India, he will visit temples of Kali or Shiva. He will meet Vaishnavas from the realm who will worship Ramachandra. And he will not try to, hey, you have to change your religion and become a Gaudi. I'm starting a movement, by the way. You would like to join? I will make my South Indian tour to canvas and gather some further herd. No, no. He will find this Ram Bhakta crying in separation. Oh, Ravana has kidnapped Sita. Mahaprabhu was, no, no, Sita was not kidnapped. He was never touched by Ravana. He then found a bird from the Kurma Purana. His way back, he visited the Brahma. Here's the evidence. She was not kidnapped. Be relieved. No, he wanted to tend to his faith. He never thought like, hey, become a Gaudiya. No, or like when the brother of Rupa and Sanatana Goswami, Anupam, the three brothers made the vow, let's worship Radha Krishna forever. And Anupam was, I love Sitaram. And that my heart is with them. They are my Ishtadeva. And I just made the vow with my brothers to worship Radha Krishna. I'm in trouble now. What to do? So they went to Mahaprabhu, and Mahaprabhu said, blessed is that devotee who cannot abandon his Ishtadev, and blessed is that Ishtadev who cannot abandon his devotee. Like approving that, right? So in that way, Mahaprabhu also moved beyond his own circle. He had his own circle, but he moved beyond his own circle. He was nourished by witnessing the diversity, as St. Francis did. So we are invited to do the same. Like good Gaudiya boys and girls, and good followers of St. Francis. Since I mentioned boys and girls, St. Francis and Mahaprabhu also embodied childlike spirit, playfulness, a lot. The different symbols, as we were talking the other day in Rome, different symbols for enlightened beings, mostly three, madman or madwoman, intoxication, like drunk, but childlike. Rig Veda also says you have to become childlike if you want to enter the kingdom of heaven. Sounds like the Bible, but that's in the Rig Veda also, interestingly. So both Francis and Mahaprabhu can be described in many ways as childlike. We already talked about them as maddened people, about intoxicated in divine love. We were missing being childlike. So Francis is often remembered as being very playful, cracking jokes, joyfully, being free and being like a holy fool. Now you have this archetype of the holy fool, like a sacred trickster, if you will. He was a holy fool for Christ. And Mahaprabhu also, his life included lots of play. They spent lots of time per day playing the water with his associates. Now, that's a proper adult. You have to spend some good time with your friends playing the water, right? Now, a whole bunch of ascetics playing in the water for hours. That's what it is. Now, he will organize with his associate dramatic enactments and plays and, again, singing and dancing and cracking lots of jokes while eating. They're having lots of fun, eating akanta up to the neck. They're having a good time. So hopefully your prospect of Nityanavadi is there. We want to go there as well. So anyhow, that's another point. Because if not, they're very serious saints and ascetics and everything is very grave and somber. Come on. Okay. And again, they were very ecstatic, they were very happy people in many ways. But the perfect joy, sometimes it's described that Francis exhibited perfect joy. But that's not a sentimental happiness. That's not a peak of dopamine. That's not a harmony junkie here, right? But there is a joy that they discover in the midst of rejection, in the midst of loss and betrayal and suffering and complexity, humiliation and hardship. That's the joy we want to embrace. That's kind of the flower that comes between the crack and the concrete, so to say. So Mahaprabhu, the same. He's experiencing ecstasy in his own way in the midst of separation and loving suffering. So it's not a cheap product. That's my point. No, it's not a cheap ecstasy. In the case of them, joy and suffering are not opposites. They embrace, they meet in a paradoxical embrace. And even their suffering becomes a source of love and ecstasy. So we need to reach that point in which joy and suffering are no longer opposites. We need to transcend the binary thinking of putting them in, compartmentalizing them in two different places. Suffering becomes transfigured by love. If you have love, everything becomes transfigured by that. Suffering, whatever you put in the front of it. Integration of complexity. A few more ideas and we have a closing exercise for you to embody all this. So both Francis and Mahaprabhu, I briefly mentioned that, but they were a living commentary on the scripture. Again, some people write that we compose written commentaries of scripture. They didn't have time for writing. They were too busy embodying the scripture. That was their commentary, their tikka, right? So Mahaprabhu didn't write basically anything. He didn't have time to write. He was too busy writing the book of his life and embodying Bhagavatam through his own walking and dancing and living. So the same time, the same way Francis May wrote a few prayers and songs, but he was too absorbed. His own life became the commentary for the gospel. Mahaprabhu's life become his own commentary on the Bhagavatam. Sometimes we may think, oh, Mahaprabhu didn't write the commentary of the Bhagavatam, it would have been so nice. What are you talking about? There you have the commentary. That's his whole life. That's why the books of Mahaprabhu's life, many some of them is called Chaitanya Bhagavat. That's his Bhagavat commentary. No? Chaitanya Bhagavat, that's his life, basically. Right? So both are embodying a scripture rather than merely explaining a scripture. They can explain a scripture, they can be theologians, but they are embodying a scripture. And that's ideal. If you are an explainer of scripture, hopefully you are an embodier of a scripture first. So Francis's gospel performed, so to say. Mahaprabhu's Bhagavatam danced. Let's put it that way. Bhagavatam in motion. Emotion in motion. In dance. And both, two more things that come to mind, both St. Francis and Mahaprabhu, they were somehow founders of their own movements among a bigger movement already existing, but both were very resistant to institutionalism. No. Francis began a movement somehow without an intention to do that, but it ended up being an order of its own, that receive approval by the Pope. We know the story, maybe in his life, but it's not that he started, I will make a movement of my own. No, I want my own Sampradaya apart from all this Catholic Church and stuff that they are doing that I don't agree with. He was not thinking like that. He just lived his life so radically. It was unavoidable, irresistible, going that direction. So there was a movement. It became institutionalized, but his life remained radically poor and simple. Even most of the people in his movement at St. Francis' life left St. Francis, interestingly enough. He didn't have a nice ending to his life. Many of his brothers left him because they were thinking about how doing the things in this way and that way, starting to think more institutionally. And Francis was, hey, guys, that was not the original intention. And just a few of them remained with St. Francis, but he left. Many of them have left. So just for you to note, because we tend to romanticize and over-idealize, everything was flowers and birds and singing and no trouble with his brothers and the movement. There was lots of trouble. Like with every and any community, as we were talking yesterday. So Mahaprabhu himself, again, he was not planning to make a movement. He just was moved internally. He started to move, to dance. Other people started to move, and the whole movement came. But his main emphasis was practice, not institutions and bricks and papers and laws and power and hierarchy. And again, the movements of both, or Franciscan order and Gaudiya Vaishnavism, have problems during the lifetime of both of them, and what to speak after the passing of both of them. Generally, after the passing of the master, there is chaos and confusion and schisms and stuff to this day in different ways. To be realistic, not to say that makes them less beautiful, that makes them more real and therefore more beautiful. And then comes, and this is the last point I want to share with you today, which is, and we find ourselves being part of this movement. So okay, with all this beauty and trouble, every member of any tradition inherit both beauty and trouble. Like you are born in one family, and you inherit the beauty and the unresolved trauma from your ancestors as well. This happens also in parampara. A lot of things pass on in parampara, just in case. So the contemporaries of every tradition will be asked, okay, the question for us, how we properly honor the legacy of our masters, and how to embody that, what needs to be done, what needs to be said. So that's the last point that I want to mention in connection to these two, which is both of them making a call to continue what we will say their unfinished work. And it's not that it wasn't unfinished because there was something wrong with Francis or Mahaprabhu, but there's always something unfinished because there's always something new that needs to be said or done. In that sense, it's unfinished and it's offering us a chance to offer some service. As yesterday, Friar Roshan from India, who was with us, guiding us, he told us at the end of his life, Francis told his followers, I have done what was mine to do. Now you must do yours. No? Parampara, passing the torch. I've done my part, now you have to do yours. It's not like I've done everything and you need to do nothing, just consume my part. Mm-hmm. Now you have to do your part. Jesus will say in the Bible, even to his followers, you will do greater things than the ones I did. That's like mind-boggling. Mm-hmm. What? Because that's the ever-evolving nature of reality. You are expected to do always something more beautiful and more beautiful. It's not that you are greater than your ancestors. By their grace, you may be able to do something more. In the same way, in our tradition, we are called not just to parrot and copy-paste what our acharya said and never say more. We have to say more. Not because we are better, but by their grace, something else needs to be said. Something else needs to be done. That's what it means to be a committed member and practitioner of a lineage. Not just going to a supermarket and picking and a consumer of the product, but what's my gift to my lineage? What's my service, my gift to the tradition? So anyhow, a few thoughts that I want to share with you today, creating some parallels and connections between the life of St. Francis and Mahaprabhu, hopefully weaving some coherence between them two. And again, how it has been a meeting between St. Francis and Mahaprabhu. Boom. stay with that, right? So hopefully also not only we thread some parallels between the two, but also we presented some of these points in ways that are relevant for us to feel called to, okay, what's mine to do in this way? How can I find purpose, meaning, belonging, identity? I'm becoming a gift to the tradition, to the world, to others, by grace. Okay, so we'll conclude with an exercise. Yeah, in a similar format like the one we did yesterday. I will be having breakfast a few minutes later, as usual. It's already becoming the norm, so it's fine. But before the exercise, I want to mention something that I will remind you during breakfast, that after breakfast, we have today 3-hour individual solitary retreat. Okay, so just mentioning that the idea is that during this time for personal contemplation, which will be from 10 to 1, 10 a.m. to 1 p.m., ideally is a time for solitude. This is a time for silence. So hopefully we won't be like chatting all over, but each one can have, we are sharing collectively, but I think it's also beautiful to balance that by learning to be with ourselves and not losing ourselves in the crowd, so to say. I will be sharing a few prompts that will be connected to today's class for you to contemplate during the time of individual retreat. And during that time of the individual retreat, you can go anywhere, stay here, hopefully you can take advantage of the beautiful nature around here. You can, if you want to go to the monastery we visited yesterday again, spend time there, whatever, however. And later today, in the afternoon, we'll have sharing circles. And also we will be in the sharing circle, continue to reflect based on what happened in the individual retreat. So we are trying like to continue like a thread during the day of connecting the different activities to properly unfold with one another. And if you have questions or things you may like to ask about, later today we'll have at 7 p.m. a space for that, Q&E, question exploration. But during breakfast, I will share with you the prompts. I can share them in the WhatsApp group, and those who prefer not to check WhatsApp and burn their cell phones, which is a good project, we can write them down and you can take them down with a paper with you to your individual retreat. So let's go to the exercise. Okay, we will do an exercise in groups of three, as we did yesterday. And for each question, again, each group will have like 5 minutes in total, so I will be marking the time like yesterday. I will play in the gong so you don't go too far away. I will be using the mic to let you know. The same thing like yesterday's. So each person will have like approximately 2 minutes, a little less. So conciseness is a good virtue, so it's a chance to exercise conciseness. So there will be three questions, as yesterday. I will mention the three of them now, and then I will mention them each one. The first one will be, what quality in Francis or Sri Chaitanya feels specially needed in the world today? From the ones we have been sharing today. It could be, of course, humility, simplicity, compassion, courage, joy, sacred emotion, whatever. Love for the marginalized, reverence for nature. For more than one, but pick one. No? Ability to renew the tradition from within. What quality in Francis or Sri Chaitanya feels specially needed in the world today? The second one is, where do you see one of these qualities already alive around you? It can be a community, a relationship you have, spiritual practice, ordinary life, in your own self. Where do you already see some of these signs of these qualities? No? Where do you see one of these qualities already living around, alive around you? And the third one will be, how could we help one another embody these qualities during their retreat? So we commit oneself to one another. What kind of atmosphere do we want to create together? How we could help one another embody these qualities during their retreat? What could help us listen better, include one another more, be more present, make this retreat hopefully a real practice and embodiment of devotion. So those are the exercises. I'm stopping the recording here. Sriman Mahaprabhu Ki Jai, St. Francis Ki Jai, Kaur Premananda Hari Bol.